The Chevalier's confederates were quick to release Carlyle, while the Chevalier himself spun toward me in the same motion, taking Thisbe in his arms. Why did they not say so themselves? Because, sir, this is their first time in the civilized world. They do not yet know its ways. I lowered from my back a sack heavy with fabric. I am to take them to Madame. In the hush, quick-thinking Carlyle managed to snatch back his tracker. The Chevalier arched perfect eyebrows. Madame is expecting them? Impatiently, Chevalier. How crestfallen his sigh. Alas, dear Thisbe, such a summons one dares not ignore. He would not leave her without at least one proper kiss as prize. He took it slowly, time enough not just for tongue, but for a succubus to have sucked the soul out of its prey, if such was its aim. He smiled when done, but Thisbe smiled deeper. Perhaps another time. Nodding to his men to follow, the Chevalier strode through the door. I was wrong to say there was no touch of the feminine remaining in the company, for, male or female, all of them moved with that artful grace we associate with ladies and dancers, as they wielded their blades as gracefully as ladies do their fans. On exit, the Chevalier glared at my servicer's uniform with proper scorn. You mustn't let clients see you like that in the halls, Mycroft, he warned. I won't, Chevalier. I cannot comment on his final expression, for I am not permitted to raise my eyes to one of his rank. I bowed low as I closed the door behind him. What are you doing here, Mycroft? Thisbe asked. No, the tone was grim, more an order than a question. I did not look at her. Patronage is everything here. When in trouble, invoke the highest-ranking person you're associated with. Did you follow us here? Or were you here already? I'm under orders to take you to Madame. Contemporary clothing is forbidden in the inner halls. You may wear these, since we do not have time for a fitting. I drew from my sack two cloaks of floor-length dark red velvet, hooded, and heavy enough to muffle even sound. How long have you been involved with these people? Thisbe pressed. Mycroft, I asked you a question. You can't have weapons when you see Madame, I recited. You may give them to me. I'll return them when you leave the premises. Thisbe crossed her arms. You will answer me, Mycroft. I recommend that you answer voluntarily. She took a menacing step forward. I sighed. I noticed when Carlyle arrived in Paris. You two shouldn't be here. This is number one in the list of places in the world you shouldn't be. You did know about this place, Carlyle accused. Of course. I tossed them each a cloak. Where J.E.D.D. Mason goes, I go. Jehovah Mason, he corrected. You knew that too? I hid my face by diving back into the sack for my own costume. Tell me you didn't use the transit computers to get this address. Thisbe's silence answered for her. Tell them you got it from me. I met her eyes now. This is important, Thisbe. We don't need the powers that be getting even more worried about the security of your Bosch. If anyone asks, you drugged me, and I told you this address when I was half asleep. I was the weak link, not your Bosch. Clear? Silence consented. We have to move fast, I continued. The Chevalier will have left one of his gentlemen outside to make sure I really do take you to Madame. Put the cloaks on. Thisbe held the garment, stubborn. Who's Madame? The owner. Please take me seriously when I say this. I'll die before I let you see Jehovah. He'd have the truth about Bridger out of you in 2 minutes. That will not happen while I live. Their stares believed me. Rumor of your coming already reached Madame. I am under orders to bring you, and hopefully meeting her will satisfy your... I took a deep breath. You shouldn't have come here. You really shouldn't have. But the faster we move, the better mood Madame will be in, and right now Madame's good humor is the only protection you have from consequences. Thisbe donned the cloak, the velvet hiding every inch of her. In a place like this, I'd have expected masks, too, like carnival. I shook my head. You're not of the right rank for masks. Carlyle, put your cloak on. He glared. Thisbe glared back. We don't have time for your Mycroft canner fixation right now, Carlyle. Do you want to trust Mycroft, or do you want to stay here and let them rape you? If Carlyle were a man who cursed, he would have done it then. They would have raped us, wouldn't they? Your friends? I did not have time to argue the difference between friends and betters. No, was on my lips, when I realized this might be my chance. I could scare them off, concoct something horrible, 1,000 times beyond reality, but plausible in the surreality of this place. Then maybe, maybe, they would run. They'd have raped you every way it's possible to rape someone, I began, my imagination racing. The group of them taking turns. Then they'd have tied you up and called in whores from downstairs to join in, and put you through every filthy act imaginable. But the law only counts it as rape if you still say no at the end. They'd make sure you couldn't. They'd use extremes of pain and pleasure until you'd agree to anything. Experts like that, it wouldn't take them an hour to get you to send messages to your boss and colleagues saying you were taking a vacation, so no one would look for you for weeks. Then they'd drag you to the kennels, where the real work would begin. Even before they entered the room, they were probably placing bets on who would succeed first, getting you to sign yourself over and become a black law. And once you did, you'd never leave this place again. Now put on your cloak and let me save you. I waited to see if my fantasy would work. Carlyle paled. He gagged. At last, chose the cloak. I sighed relief. Weapons, Thisbe? I pressed, offering my empty sack. Carlyle's eyes turned from hate narrow to child wide as he watched Thisbe pull from hidden places a sturdy knife, a second sturdy knife, a stun pistol, a tranquilizer pistol, and 3 flash grenades. Thisbe, what? My bash is vital to the world order, remember? Occam and Cardi aren't the only ones who study self-defense. She placed the arsenal piece by treasured piece within my sack. I regretted doing this in front of Carlyle, I really did. All weapons, Thisbe. Death hate reared that instant in her glare. There are security scanners every 10 feet in the halls, Thisbe, I pressed. They'll know. I'm sorry. I'll give them back to you, I swear by Apollo Mojave. Even with that, it took her 3 long breaths to face up to the necessity. She knelt. Thisbe, Carlyle called, what are you? Don't ask. The clasping mechanisms exhaled long hisses as the woman removed her boots. Carlyle leaned closer. Thisbe, I said don't ask. Now get your fucking cloak on before you do anything else to get us in deeper shit. She set her boots in my sack, gently as a mother lays down a child, then spun to vent her wrath upon the sensei. I don't want another word out of you, Carlyle, you hear me? Not about Mycroft or the costume. Mycroft is rescuing your stupid ass, and you're going to do everything Mycroft says to the letter until we're out of here. Costume? Carlyle repeated it as a question, but then saw what she meant. The sack had a costume for me, too, to cover my servicer's dappling, the rough, grayish-brown habit of a Franciscan monk. To you, one monk is probably like another, since our schools don't teach their many founders distinctive madnesses. Francis was a saint among saints, and a madman among madmen, who used to talk to birds, to ravage his own body with scourge and ice, to turn down pious hosts, preferring to beg his supper on the street, who even refused to be in command in his order, insisting that his own followers rule him so he could practice the virtue of obedience, and who had to be sternly ordered to eat and rest, or he would have destroyed himself by overpunishing his sinful flesh. Franciscans live on charity alone, owning nothing, not their monasteries, not their plates and cups, or the shoes upon their feet. Carlyle knew this, and watched the monkish gray-brown slide over my servicer dappling, and shuddered. "Come," I opened the door. "There's no more time." They followed me in fear-fast silence. We found not one but three of the Chevalier's men lurking in the hall, enjoying a long bench of rose-pink satin, pocked with buttons like navels repeating along an infinite torso. This bench lined the near wall of the corridor from end to end, breaking only from the doors of labeled rooms. Salon Hogarth, Salon Caligula, Salon Rochester, Salon Salome, Salon de Pompadour. The far wall was one great window, looking down over the central hall below, where stairways, landings, and balconies descended like the terraces of Dante's Hell, all covered with flesh. The lovemaking took place in piles, 2, 3, 4 lovers at a time, throwing themselves into the vastness of skirts with the glee of kids swimming in chocolate. Men and women of both sexes paraded in the most elaborate gowns and wigs and coats and tails, or what remained of them, as bodices and breeches opened to bear their ready cargo. Many were not even in the act of sex, but simply lying upon each other, dining and gossiping amid the spectacle. Waiters threaded among them, bussers, jugglers, a contortionist, and the Royal Belgian String Quartet, performing here with far more vigor than they had shown at Ganymede's party. Never, reader, have you seen so many people in one place, and not a single frown. "They can't see us," I reassured as I led. "This hallway is the middle level, for club members of more importance. That down there is the Hall of Venus, though the Chevalier's men call it the Flesh Pit. It's the lower clients' level. It's all legal, carefully monitored and hygienic, guests and employees subject to strict health inspection and all that, and our doctors claim a weekly visit does as much for body and mind as a censer. It's invitation only, word of mouth. But we get all sorts here. Of course, no one of any real consequence stays down in the flesh pit level for long." I glanced back. "Are you familiar with the 18th century author Voltaire?" "Not really," Thisbe answered, drowning Carlyle's yes. "They were the patriarch of the Enlightenment," I explained. "So influential, they not only dominated literature, but could virtually force the hand of royalty, the law, even the church a bit. Voltaire was also a deist, which means they believe that all religions are different understandings of the same universal God, who made the world, but doesn't really care what name or names he's called by." "Mycroft," Thisbe interrupted, "why are you telling me this now?" I did not have time to pause. Late in life, Voltaire built a small church on their estate. After so many churches built to saints, they said, it was about time someone built one to God. They put an inscription over the entrance, Deo Erexit Voltaire, built for God by Voltaire. In a sense, it's the high temple of deism. Strange as it sounds to say that a religion which combines most all religions could have a high temple. We had reached the center of the house, where the wall of doors and couches opened on our left to a grand staircase leading up to a level as far above ours as ours was above the flesh pit. A purple carpet led up past trickling chandeliers to a double door at the top, framed by a marble arch and the inscription, Deo Erexit Sad. We did not have time for shock and silence. "Immediately to our left," I whispered, "is a small door leading to a secret stairway which will take you to the street. To our right is a very heavy candelabrum, If you club me over the head and run, you should make it out before anyone can follow.